The following is an encore episode of Hour 1 of the Turley Frequency with host Kevin Turley. We hope you enjoy.
You've tuned to the Turley Frequency, starring your host, Kevin Turley, with guest stars Mike Romano and Reed Hodges, and special guest stars, the members of the FCC, whom we respect
respectfully.
Now, time to get tuned into the frequency. Call the show at 888-928-0881. That's 888-928-0881. Or text us at 251-928-2111. And now we cross live to the Archangel Radio Studios in downtown Fairhope to at last feel the Turley Frequency.
Yes, hello and good morning and welcome to Friday's edition of the Turley Frequency with me, your host Kevin Turley. Today on the show, well, we're going to meet Father Darren Merlino from Catholic Media Missionaries, who will be telling us all about what it's like to be a Catholic priest at the dark heart of Hollywood. We talk with Father Darren in the next segment. Top of the hour, we pray the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and you are invited to join us. Feel free to text me your prayer requests on 251-928-2111. The lines are open for you right now. In the final segment today, we continue our Hollywood theme when we speak to Chuck Kunzelman and Carrie Solomon, the directors of Unplanned, God is Dead, and more recently, Nefarious. Okay, with all this good stuff, let's get this show on the road. Hello and welcome back to the Turley Frequency on this Friday morning. I hope it's going well. It's Friday. It's got to go well, right? So it's all Hollywood today on the show. We meet a priest, as I just said, working there, toiling in that vineyard of Hollywood, Hollywood. Maybe he's making it holier. Anyway, we also meet two movie directors who are making waves out there. And Hollywood is definitely in the news at the moment. I don't know if you've just heard, but the whole business of strikes have suddenly taken on a new meaning. Now, most of you will have heard vague rumors about a writer's strike. Okay, the Writers Guild of America went on strike back on May 2nd. And let's be honest, most of us didn't really notice. Okay, you may have heard it on the news, but you didn't really notice. There's an old joke about, there's lots of jokes about writers in Hollywood. Writers on a film project are often the people who are generating ideas and are very important to the film's production, but they are the least significant often in the public view. So obviously, movie stars come first, then directors, then producers, then sometimes some of the sort of technical specialisms that are needed, like cinematographers or people who create the music beds for it, you know, the sort of thing. And all of that is very important. But the poor old writer is often left bottom of the pile. In fact, I would suggest that most people, not only do they not know who the writer is, they couldn't care less who the writer is of most of these films. Hollywood history is littered with many very, very good writers who never got the fame that they should have done. We'll talk all about that another day. But anyway, for the moment, the writers went on strike and nobody really noticed. But things in Tinseltown may be getting a little bit more militant as of last night. And that's because it does involve the directors and the movie stars and all the rest. Take a listen to this.
Well, this is turning out to be a big deal. Television and movie actors just voted to authorize the biggest walkout in four decades.
The decision came this afternoon. It is setting up to be a real Hollywood blockbuster breakdown. Alicia's here with the very latest on the actors. now joining the writers on the picket line.
This is a huge deal. SAG-AFTRA represents roughly 160,000 film and TV actors. They are now joining those Hollywood screenwriters who have been picketing for over 70 days now. Actress Fran Drescher is the union's president. She says this major decision to strike is not lost on them.
It came with great sadness that we came to this crossroads, but we had no choice. We are the victims here. We are being victimized by a very greedy entity. I am shocked by the way the people that we have been in business with are treating us.
She went on to say they know this is going to affect hundreds of thousands of people across the globe. The leaders of that union approving a strike hours after contract talks with a group of studios broke down. Sticking points include residuals in this streaming era and just how the studios plan to work with artificial intelligence going forward.
This is a wake-up call not only for the entertainment industry, but for every industry to really look at that and say, we are not being paid fairly. We are not being paid a fair share of the pie for what we are contributing to these industries.
The Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers says it is, quote, deeply disappointed that SAG-AFTRA has decided to walk away from negotiations, adding that it had offered, quote, historic pay and residual increases and a, quote, groundbreaking AI proposal that protects actors' digital likenesses. Hollywood studios now facing their first dual work stoppage in 60 years. Again, the actors and the writers shutting down both productions and promotions for already completed films. That means a halt to red carpets, junkets, and again, our fall season television coming up. And a lot of this is all on halt until they figure this out.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. I didn't know whether to laugh or cry when she said it would be a halt to red carpets and junkets, as if that's all Hollywood was about. But it was really interesting, some of the terminology that was being used there. Now, the woman who was speaking on behalf of the Screen Actors Guild, as it was known, SAG, they've amalgamated with the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, so it's SAG-AFTRA. It sounds so awful. Screen Actors Guild had a certain... a certain charm to it. Anyway, the woman who's in charge of that, or the spokeswoman for them, as you can see, she was an actress, or she is an actress, and she spoke very movingly. I almost felt like she was going to be crying at one point as she spoke.
Kevin, I'm actually a member of SAG-AFTRA, this is honestly very, very embarrassing, very sad state of affairs, in my opinion. You know, I'll probably get booted off for saying this.
You're not thinking of walking out of Archangel Radio, are you?
Oh, God. I mean, we're paid. They're paid enough. You know, the unions. I mean, if you've ever seen how much, you know, actors are paid to do certain projects, it's enough. And why are we just now walking out? And I think it's just because of a few higher up members, you know, didn't get their way. You know, they got a Diet Coke as opposed to Coke Zero, you know, on their rider. It's just ludicrous and embarrassing, in my opinion. And I'm sure, you know, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to see how it plays out. But it was interesting what one of the major problems are that they have highlighted, and probably rightly so. I mean, there's all sorts of grievances. There's always grievances when it comes to money between employer and employee, no matter what industry you work in. But the thing that this particular union is up in arms about is around AI. And it's around the use of AI, in particular, that studios would kind of take an image of an actor, an actress, and then be able to replicate that and use it again and again and again forever and a day without any residual pay. And that is an issue. As you'll know, Mike, residuals are often the bread and butter for many actors and voice artists and all the rest of it, right?
Yeah, they are. They are. That's how many of them have made a good living out of it. I mean, I haven't researched the true reasons why that were really in this whole mess that somebody brought it up. But look, I'm grateful. Look, at the end of the day, I'm in a right to work state. Okay, so I shouldn't judge, but I think we should be, as actors, just in general, we should be more thankful, more grateful that, and all actors who are working should be grateful that they're working, and they're getting paid a good living to do it.
Yes, indeed. I was just thinking, though, I mean, in terms of the use of one's image forever and a day, they've obviously never heard of EWTN, which if you've ever had the benefit of appearing on, you will appear on until kingdom come, literally. They keep repeating endlessly, certainly this side of the Atlantic, anything I've ever been on. And people sometimes come up to me and say, I've just seen you on this latest TV show. And I said, which one was that? And they tell me. And I said, that was filmed about 6 or 7 years ago. But anyway, that's another story. But anyway, it's interesting that the Hollywood strike, which we will follow in the weeks ahead, is partly at least revolving around AI, because you just can't move at the moment for AI headlines of one sort or another. Now, just back a few months ago, there was an open letter by 350 technology executives, researchers, and academics that warned of the existential threat of artificial intelligence. In that letter, they said the following: mitigating the risk of extinction from AI should be a global priority alongside other societal scale risks, such as pandemics and nuclear war. Yes, you heard that right. AI is as much of a threat, according to these high-powered tech execs, researchers, and academics, as pandemics such as COVID and nuclear wars. Now, the statement was published, as I say, in May of this year, and hot on its heels came another warning, this time from Twitter boss Elon Musk and Steve Wozniak, who is the co-founder of Apple. Their joint letter called for a six-month moratorium on the development of advanced AI systems because of the risks still to be determined around AI. Now, these guys are pretty in the know, right? And they have major concerns about AI. It may have passed you by, but the Biden administration has begun a sort of fact-finding about how to manage the risks of AI. That started last month in May as well. And as of this month, the United Nations Security Council, you know, the Security Council that deals with global wars and pandemics and all the rest of it, well, it's holding its first ever meeting on the potential threat to international peace and security posed by AI. It's organized initially by the United Kingdom, and this summit will examine risks of AI in relation to autonomous weapons and, perhaps more alarming still, the risks around AI's potential control of nuclear weapons. So increasingly, AI is being seen as a threat not only to our way of life, but to the very idea of human civilization. Now, we mentioned Elon Musk just a few moments ago. Well, let's see what his latest endeavor is, because it seems that he has now other ideas on how to counter the threat of AI. Take a listen to this.
Elon Musk is thinking big, really big. He wants to save the world from AI terminators, and he has a new company to take on the mission. XAI was set up this week. Musk says its task is to create a safer artificial intelligence. But that doesn't mean programming chatbots to be good. Instead, Musk says the plan is to make an AI that is maximally curious. That means its goal will be nothing less than understanding the true nature of the universe. Musk reckons that will make AI less dangerous, because a universe with humans in it will be more interesting for the bots than a universe without humans.
There's a real danger for digital superintelligence.
Musk has repeatedly warned that AI is a risk to human survival, but he's also suggested the danger wasn't imminent. The billionaire says superintelligence, that's AI smarter than humans, won't arrive for 5 or 6 years. Musk's new company will work closely with Twitter, Tesla, and his other brands. He's recruited a team of engineers from places like Microsoft and Google. Now all they have to do is save the world.
So listen, we've gone from Hollywood, where they're talking about a threat, an existential threat from an entity, right? Now, I looked at some other footage of various union leaders for Hollywood speaking, and one of them talked about the need to protect human artistry. Human artistry, as opposed to, yes, AI. And now Elon Musk is trying to set up some sort of AI, which is something that can be controlled. So, in the words of the journalist, they can save the world, or at least try to save the world. So things start getting out of hand. But when we bandy around terms like human artistry, save the world, you know, it makes me wonder what it means to be human. If an artificial intelligence could do this show, and I'm sure somebody could, what difference does it make being human doing this show? What's the difference? If somebody in Hollywood can take Mike's image and replicate it and use it again and again and again in films, what's the difference between that and the image of the real Mike? So I wondered to myself what it actually means to be human. So what did I do? Well, do you remember we had Dave Matney on a few days ago? And he is part of that wonderful group, Fiveable, and they have created something known as Catholic Chat. And Catholic Chat is a chat GPT device application which interrogates the catechism of the Catholic Church. So I went on it this morning and put in the question, what is a human being? And bang, up it came. Now, I have to say, why did I do that rather than look it up in the catechism paper copy or even online? And the reason is this, it's quicker. And also, I knew that the catechism doesn't have a paragraph that says, what is a human being? So what this did in a matter of seconds was collate all that information and present it to me in a wonderfully succinct way. And I looked at it this morning and thought, that's great. Fantastic. So that's a really good use of AI. So what did it say? Well, as you probably know, the Catechism of the Catholic Church says a human being is unique and complex, created in the image and likeness of God. Human beings possess both a physical body, flesh and blood, and, importantly, a spiritual soul, which together form a single nature. But then the Catechism goes on to emphasize that human beings are created by God out of love and called into a special relationship with Him. Now, it goes on to talk about how human beings are given the gifts of rationality, free will, distinguishing them from other creatures, including AI. Because this rationality allows us to seek truth, understand the world around us, and make moral decisions. It allows us to choose, essentially, between good and evil, the free will that we're given. Moreover, human beings are social by nature and created to live in community and to serve one another, promoting the common good and the dignity of every person. Now, you get the picture, right? Now, when you listen to what the Catechism says about what it is to be human, that is a million miles away from the functionality of AI, right? What we're called to is so much more beautiful, so much more dignified, and so much more exalted than simply an ability to process information or ape behavior in a certain way. So you can get rid of the human and replace it with an AI, but you're replacing something which has a totally different path in this current world that we live in. Now, I did say we could get rid of the human being. And I think have we got a call? I just had a note through. Do we have a call, Reed?
We sure do, Kevin. Sorry, the Lionel Richie wasn't ready
That's okay.
This morning.
Just put him through. I know the system's been playing up. Let's put the call through. Maybe it's somebody who wants to comment on the writers and screen actors strike.
Hi, Kevin. This is Chris Nang. Oh, my God. So, just like my career was starting, and then it just, like, it ended. I was working on American Werewolves in London, Werewolves in the Suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody just started walking out. And I'm like, where are you going? And they're like, we're going to be replaced by robots. I don't want to be replaced by a robot. I don't want there to be a robot, Kirsten.
No, Kirsten, don't upset yourself. I mean, for a start, the robots are a totally different genre, okay? You can't replace werewolves with robots because one of them is a horror genre, one is a sci-fi. So rest assured, you will not be replaced by a robot.
You think so? Because what if, like, I don't want to see myself up on the screen. What if it's not, like, beautiful like I am? What if the robot's not hot, you know? Like, I just can't imagine that, Kevin.
Well, we're a long way away from that. And anyway, I'm sure you'll be taking part of the strike and fighting for the rights of all human beings against these horrible AI Terminators that are trying to take your roles.
I will. They're going down, Kevin. They're going down. I would throw chickens at them and eggs. Oh my God. That's right.
Okay. Well, listen, Kirsten, it's been great to hear from you, and keep us updated on that strike out in California, especially with all those screen actors and werewolves currently sitting
redundant.
Okay, when we come back, we'll be talking Hollywood, but from a different perspective. We're going to be meeting a priest who is a Catholic media missionary. Stay tuned to the Turley Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. Welcome back to Turley Frequency, here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. It is so good to have your company this Friday morning. Now, there's definitely a Hollywood theme developing on today's show. And my next guest is at the center of that world, or more precisely, perhaps, and I need to ask him about this, he's at the center of the spiritual battle for the soul of Hollywood. Father Darren Merlino is a Claretian missionary priest living in Los Angeles. Prior to that, he'd been a high school teacher, youth minister, and for 5 years, pastor at the Sacred Heart Church in Prescott, Arizona. His ordination in the year 2000 was the first ever in U.S. history to be broadcast live via the Internet. Now, Father Merlino is an evangelizing priest through the media, and is a founder of Catholic Media Missionaries. He is also the host of series like Hound of Heaven, which tells the stories of Catholic celebrities, and he's the author of his debut book, 30 Days Unplugged, How a Catholic Priest Turned Off His iPhone and Took a Call from God. More recently, Father Darren was the theological consultant and partial technical advisor to the movie Nefarious, and we're going to meet the directors of that later today. And in that movie, he also played a part of security in the movie. I wish I'd known this when I'd watched it. I'd have been watching out for Father Darren. Father Darren, welcome back, or welcome to the Turley Frequency.
Hey, thank you very much. A pleasure to be here.
Now, Father Darren, heading to Hollywood to save souls, it's a bit of a tall order, surely. There aren't any souls to save out there.
Well, that's an understatement, but... You know, I'm a religious priest, as you mentioned. So, you know, California, Southern California is home for me. I was born and raised in California. I've lived in Santa Barbara and Huntington Beach during my childhood years and young adult years. And now I live in L.A. proper. And so luckily for us as Claretians, we have houses in the Los Angeles area. I live in L.A. proper right now. And, you know, one of the things that I try to tell everybody that we're not technically trying to evangelize Hollywood. We're trying to be present in Hollywood to create media projects, movies, TV series, books, speakers, miniseries, you name it, where we have God-themed or Christian themes. And obviously Chuck and Carrie, who you'll have on later, will explain more about that, what they're trying to do as well. We're very, very close friends. So, yeah, I'm not like technically going to the studios and going, hey, my name is Father Darren, can I save your soul? I'm not doing that.
Yes, and it would be fun watching you do it, but I don't think you'd get very far. We better start at the beginning, Father Darren, because sure. I've already had a question in from our audience saying, what is Claritians? And now, we all know the Jesuits, the Dominicans, the Franciscans, but I'm afraid the Claritians sometimes get a pass. Just explain a little bit about the history of your order to begin with.
Sure, I'll give you about a minute here. St. Anthony Mary Claret, feast day October 24th, was born. He died in 1870. He's the first bishop to attend Vatican I to be canonized a saint. He had a great philosophy, which I live by, which is to preach the gospel in urgent, timely, and effective ways, and which is great because you always have the same message, which is the gospel of the Catholic Church teachings, but your method's always supposed to change and supposed to, you know, be move with the times, if you will. And so, but because of that, St. Anthony Claret really believed in using media back then, which is the printed word, to preach the gospel. He'd write his homilies out, print them up in books, and pass them out to his mission attendees in the company of Spain. So now we're like in 68 countries. We're preachers of the word. We have like 500 parishes, 3,000 priests alone. We're in all the continents except Antarctica. So we're definitely small. We're between four to 5,000 members, including seminarians globally. But our impact, we were involved in canon law and during Vatican II. We've been very quiet in our effectiveness in the church. We're definitely not as known as like the Franciscans, Jesuits, and Dominicans, as you mentioned.
And why did you end up a Claritian? Were you at a school run by them or a parish or something like that?
More interesting than that, when I became a seminarian, I had joined a religious order here in Southern California, and kind of more monastic-y, and my personality is a little bit not monastic. So about after 2.5 years of trying to live that type of a lifestyle, the abbot at that time says, you know what, I don't think you're called to the state of life, so we're going to discern you out. So I left. But in the meantime, while being there with that religious order, my spiritual director and confessor was an outside priest, and he's a Claritian. And he told me about St. Anthony Claret and about his media and his creativity. I'm like, oh, you've intrigued me. Tell me more about him. And so his name is Father Robert Bishop, and which is funny. We used to make fun of him because we said if you ever became bishop, we would call you Bishop Squared. Bishop. So, he is a mentor of mine. He's still alive. Definitely health is deteriorating, but just wonderful, great guy. And he's African. He's black. He's a black convert to Catholicism. So he's very unique. And so his whole story about St. Anthony Claret, with his Eucharistic spirituality and his Marian spirituality, really intrigued me. And when I read the autobiography, St. Anthony Mary Claret, which if you have an opportunity to read it, is amazing. If you're really, especially if you're in the media and into creative ways of preaching the gospel, he was so far ahead of his time, it was ridiculous. I'm like, I was reading his autobiography, like, this sounds like pre-Vatican II back in the 1850s. Post-Vatican II back in the 1850s. I was so impressed by his creativity and his, and so that's how I found St. Anthony Claret, was through another Claritian. And it wasn't like a strong hit me over the head. It's just the more I learned about him, the more I was like, oh, I love this saint. So I just love St. Anthony Claret. He's one of my favorite saints, but definitely unknown.
You're listening to the voice of Father Darren Marlino, who is a founder, indeed, of the Catholic Media Missionaries. Now, Father Darren, it's one thing to discern a vocation, absolutely, join a religious order, and you did so. Right. And you were, for many years, a pastor in a parish out in Arizona, which is what most priests do, okay? Most priests are parish priests or working in parish pastoral work. But what possessed you, if that's the right verb, to head to Hollywood? When did you feel this calling that the media might be the place for you to do your holy work?
You're going to laugh at this. I was in fifth grade when I knew that I wanted to work in entertainment, photography, video. And when I joined my first religious order, I was very naive. This is the 80s, so my knowledge of discernment was really weak and not very polished. So when I joined the Claritians back in when I applied in 91, I said, hey, it says here that you guys are open to media and communications. And they go, yeah, our founder, that's what he was famous for. So I joined the Claritians specifically to do what I'm finally doing now. But because God had a lot of work to do with me, he just knew that I was super raw and green as green can be, greener than Ireland during the wintertime.
That is pretty green, you know that.
Yeah, that's pretty green, as you know. I figured you could appreciate the reference. I joined the Claritians specifically to do this, but it took quite a few years as a priest in formation and flirted with media during my formation as a seminarian. But ultimately, I needed to be pastor at Sacred Heart in Prescott. And I really, the Lord really wanted me to have that pastoral pastor experience. And that came in really big handy for me to now come here to LA and work with people in the industry and understand the talk and not be afraid to talk about money when I needed to do fundraising for the ministry. It just gave me a different confidence that I was unaware of that I didn't have or needed to do this ministry. So as much as I would love to have started in my 30s to do this ministry, the Lord waited till I was in my 50s to do it.
Yeah, well, he has his own time, absolutely. Now, I actually worked in the film industry for a while, Father Darren, and probably one of the things that you also know in your heart is that most of the people working in the film industry and the industry itself, a lot of it is ordinary people doing rather mundane tasks or ordinary tasks, doing them very well, sometimes not so well. But the kind of glitz and glamour that we associate with the whole media industry is really just the icing on the cake. And underneath, you have people with the same struggles, the same problems. If you've ever been on a film set, you'll know that everybody's working away from home. And you know what the most conversation's about? People going around showing you snaps of their children saying how much they miss them, right? So, I mean, I'm sure you've seen that there is a real pastoral need away from the cameras and away from the microphones.
I cannot emphasize in that. And also, I had a friend of mine, when you see his face, he was on a TV show called Rules of Engagement, and he was one of the main characters. And I'd go on the set every, like, maybe five or six times total during the series. And the producer, the executive producer, came up to me after the end of one of the shows. And I'm just dressed in my civilian clothes, if you will, you know, blue jeans and a polo shirt kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And he comes up to me and he goes, Father, I want to apologize if there was anything risque that might have offended you after the shooting of the show. And I was shocked by that because this guy was a secular, I think he's Jewish. He was secular Jewish, not really religious, very nice guy. He was always kind to me, but I was so shocked that he felt obligated to apologize for me after this show had so many immoral things in the show. And I was shocked that because of my who I am as a priest, not being very judgmental, but willing to listen to people. I'll talk to the hairdressers and I'll talk to the movie stars and just being genuinely concerned for them and just talking to them. I was surprised how many people would open up to me and just ask me questions. And because, I mean, I have a unique personality and I'm 6'4". So obviously when I walk into a room, I'm always usually the 90% of the time the tallest guy in the room. So I always stick out. And so I've learned to use that height, which I can't control, and just be a nice guy. And it's surprisingly these people in the industry, even the actors, who are willing to listen if you're just come off as unjudgmental. But I was told specifically, do not wear my clerics on the set in Hollywood because it would not bode well. They just really have such an anti-Catholic mentality. But I let my personality and my knowledge of Jesus and the church to in a sense just read the room, talk to people, and have them understand me as a person first before they understand me as, he's a Catholic priest, he's judging me, I'm not going to talk to him. So luckily for me, I have an approachable personality that's become very helpful for me.
Okay, we're going to pause it there for the moment, Father Darren, and when we come back, sure, we'll be speaking more with Father Darren Marlino about life in Hollywood as a Catholic priest. And remember, you can call in on 888-928-0881 and speak to Father Darren, or you can text me on 251-928-2111. Back after these words. Stay tuned to the Turley Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. Frequency here live on Archangel Radio. It is so good to have your company on this Friday, and I'm in conversation with Father Darren Marlino, who is the founder of Catholic Media Missionaries out there in LA. Father Darren, just for the break, I put out the request for questions, and I'll throw you a softball, as they say in the States, to begin.
Oh my gosh, okay. I'm not used to that. That's good.
Does Father Darren believe the seat of all diabolical resides in Hollywood?
You know, I always tell everybody that the culture of Hollywood, meaning the, which is, for lack of a better expression, the area, we use the word area. Hollywood is not really just, it not only is a part of LA, but just for argument's sake, is this. The way Hollywood works is very anti-Christian, very demonic. Like, they always try to screw you. They always try to take ruin your reputation. It's very anti-Christian in all the way they operate. So that community, that culture, cannot change. You cannot change Hollywood, because when you study spiritual warfare and possession and stuff like that, when you have a demonic community, you cannot convert the demonic community. You can convert an individual and pull that individual out. But just like in the gospel, where you had this one person who was possessed by a legion, and then that legion was sent into a bunch of pigs, and those pigs went into the water, those demons don't get annihilated. They have to go somewhere. And sometimes you have communities or areas that have a vortex, if you will, where you can't break it, but you can only take individuals out one at a time. And that's what you always hear of. You hear people coming out of that. So what we're trying to do is create an environment of honesty, paying people what they deserve, not stealing people's ideas. I mean, complete opposite. But you cannot physically do that in the Hollywood area, because people just, it's not a Christian environment the way they do business. They're always stealing ideas. I mean, and we, Chuck and Carrie, you'll talk to later, myself, we're not into stealing people's ideas. We like to use people's ideas to preach the gospel. But Hollywood itself, there's definitely a lot of demonic element there. And there's probably a lot of community. There's probably Satanism. I'm not good friends with any of them. A priest is not in good position if he's trying to go in there and trying to break up a community. You could pray for protection from it. But if they freely choose to do demonic things or to do evil things and do that constantly, you're out of luck, because if they freely choose to do evil, you can't do anything for them. All you do is pray for their conversion somehow. But that community is definitely has a demonic element, and Chuck and Carrie can even tell you way more stories than I can.
Sure.
People they've met. But yeah, it's definitely, there's a vortex here. There's a lot of creative energy here, but there's also a lot of demonic stuff that goes on here, and I can feel the difference here versus being other places, for sure.
Really? You really sense it?
I do. There are times where when I'm in different parts of the country, you can just feel the Christian element. And here, I love the creativeness of LA. I do. That's one of the things I really enjoy about LA. Not only is the weather, it's the best weather in the world. But I can feel the creative people thinking. It's, I don't know how to explain it, but the expression is the vibe is, there's some things I like about that creative vibe, because it gives you, it kind of pushes the envelope for you to be more creative and to come up with more creative ideas on how to preach the gospel. And I've always appreciated that, because when I've gone to other parts of the country, I don't feel that that vibe, if you will, where I want to be more creative or to come up with more creative ideas. But here, I definitely sense that for sure.
Mm. Now, we've had a couple of questions in about Nefarious, and I know, yes. Father Darren, you were theological consultant and partial technical advisor, but also yes. you had a small part in it. And I was racking my brains during the break, and I think yes. I remember you because of what yes. you said. You're 6'4", right?
Yes, yes. I was. I'm part of the dead man walking crew that brings the prisoner to his death. Yep.
That's it. Because you're a little bit different from the other ones, shall I say, that are escorting the prisoner, it that way. So listen, yeah. let's talk about that experience. First of all, how did you get involved sure. in the movie in the first place?
So Chuck and Carrie, Chuck Conselman and Carrie Solomon are close friends of mine. I've known them since 2012. We met through a mutual friend. Always touch base, when I went to Prescott, I would say, hey, what are you working on? Oh, we're writing this movie called God's Not Dead. Oh, tell me about it. And they go, oh, it's too complicated. Well, let me know when it comes out. So 2014, that comes out. And then, because I went to Prescott in 12. And then that comes out, does amazingly well. They do God's Not Dead number two. They does pretty well. And then they start working on this movie called Unplanned. They go, hey, why don't you come on out, say mass for us, hear people's confessions, bless the set, and come out for a few days. So I did that during May of 18. And I was there for 3 days. I go, I would love to be here full time. I'm working in parishes right now. He says, hey, on our next movie, we definitely want you to be on the set, be there all the time. And so COVID hit. And so they're writing Nefarious. And they were coming. They were physically coming to my mom's house in Huntington Beach for mass every Sunday or Saturday night because at that time all the churches were closed. So April, May, June, July, August, September of 2020, they were coming to my house where I was staying with my mom in Southern California, and we would just have mass. We'd have mass, we'd get dinner, and then him and my best friend and his family would come together. We'd just talk movies for hours after mass. So they'd get there around 4, we'd be done by midnight. We were just talking, what projects are you working on, some ideas for movies. And so they said, oh, yeah, we have to write this movie called Nefarious, kind of like Screw Tape Letters. Idea. I said, oh, this is, I definitely want to be involved in this film. You go, yeah, we need you because we need a priest to be present on this film because it's going to be a lot of demonic interference. So we definitely want a priest on the film. I've been trained to be an exorcist. I'm not an exorcist, but I've been trained in it. And so they
just explain the difference in Father Darren, because it's a sort of canon law point, isn't it, really?
Yes, very, very strong canon law point. So I went to a school, I won't mention the name, not California, but in the United States, finished up the program. So I understand what we need to do and a basic understanding of demonic possession, obsession, and all those things, plus how to do with it. But the bishop has to give the priest the written or verbal permission to be an exorcist for a particular possessed case. And I do not have that permission, nor have I ever asked for it. So in the Diocese of Los Angeles, where I'm at, I am not the exorcist here. I don't do exorcism. I do deliverance ministry, maybe in the confessional, like, you know, praying over them and asking the Lord to exercise
sure.
whatever.
Which any priest can do that, right?
Any priest can do it. That's part of our charism as priests. So that's a very good point. So I would say I know enough to get out of and in trouble. and most exorcists will tell you that they're not experts, even though they might have done thousands of them, because every demon is its own species. So there's always a different sure. element to the particular case. But yes, I do not have permission to be an exorcist. I have friends who are exorcists. They're just regular old priests, just, you know, great guys, just doing the work. So, with that knowledge, I used that knowledge, came to the set, and Chuck and Carrie goes, hey, the script's finally done. This is like in 2021, early 21. They finish it, and they go, hey, read this. Can I be the theological consultant for it? Sure. So I read it, and of course, I gave very small. They did their homework. Everything was very plausible and how everything worked and how the guy got possessed. I made a few small points that I pointed out. How did this happen? I don't want to give spoiler alerts for those who haven't seen it yet. So sure. They said, yeah, this is probably why this happened. And I said, oh, okay. But overall, it's like, this script is super really good. I go, the original ending was a little long for me, so they tightened it up a lot. And so, and I said, this is brilliant how you ended it. I just, let's get this thing done. And so that's how I got involved. They just come into my house in Huntington Beach and same eating dinner and hanging out for 4th of July and, you know, eating hamburgers and eating takeout food and just, you know, just talking about films. And that's how I got involved. And the Holy Spirit, very unique. When you hear all three of us in a room talk, Carrie and I will probably dominate most of the conversation just because Carrie's an amazing verbal storyteller. Chuck is really ridiculously insightful. And I'm just a loudmouth priest.
Yeah. But listen, it sounds to me like just having you on set, I mean, it must have been a great opportunity to do, as I say, pastoral work with a whole group of people that are together for quite a prolonged period of time, quite a stressful situation. Yeah. And on a subject matter, which there must have been, I mean, Carrie's been on the show and talked about this, there was the odd incident, shall we say.
My gosh, I literally used the analogy of God and the devil played tennis, and all they served were aces. There was no volley back.
Wow.
God would come in and boom, send an ace, and the devil goes, ooh, nice shot. And the devil goes, oh yeah, God, well, take this, boom, ooh. And God would go, ooh, nice shot. And it was like that all throughout the pre-production, the production, and post-production. God won because the movie got made. Ultimately, but I'm telling you, man, and I use this too as a verb. We all know the story of Job and how he got beat pretty bad and lost a lot of things. And so I use the analogy. We got Jobed on all those who were involved in the movie. We have our marks. We have our, we've had our bad experiences, and I can't say it was a fun experience, but I enjoyed the experience of how to make a movie, what goes into making a movie, how really complicated it is. And I'm like, my brain was blowing up, like all the details you need to know. That's why you have to hire so many different people who are experts in that particular area to make a movie look amazing. And so I don't know what kind of stories you want me to tell.
We're sort of up against the clock a little bit, Father Darren, but somebody might be listening because we go out FM and AM across Lower Alabama. Somebody might be listening to this, not even Catholic maybe, and thinking, yeah, Father Darren, he's just exaggerating. So just give us one incident where this spiritual tennis match kicked off.
It was the first week of the strike. December 6th through the 12th, the first full week, and literally the whole crew of the movie, all of them, walked off the set and never came back in the middle of after the first 3 days of production. That's a really bad thing because you're spending money and there's nobody working on the film. So during that time, owners of something or somebody was there at the place did some new agey smoke burning thing outside our office space. And there was like a glass door there for security. You could physically climb over the door. But so what happened was I had done a perimeter of exercise salt and exercise water throughout the whole 200,000 square feet. And I walked outside this perimeter and I smelt this really evil, weird, sagey, new agey smelling incense or smoke, whatever. What was weird is that smoke did not cross the barrier of the exercise salt. So it stayed outside. And I've smelled people smell cigarettes 40, 50, 60, 100 feet away. But that smoke, which was only like 5 feet away, did not penetrate our exercise blessed area. And that was that's one of the small ones. We had an incident where Oklahoma experienced the worst windstorm in its history. And it sounded like the roof, the metal on the roof is 70 feet high. The metal on top of the roof was bending like the Titanic's about to break and fall apart. And every time the directors would say action, the wind would take off and you could hear the metal bending and it's screwing up the audio during the recording of these particular scenes all day long. What's weird is every time the directors would say action, the wind would take off. You could hear the bending of the metal. And then you would hear it cut, and then the wind would stop. It was on cue all day long for 12 hours. Action, win, cut, win, stop. Unbelievable. I've never seen anything like it.
It sounds absolutely incredible. Listen, we're almost out of time, Father Darren, and I wanted to talk to you all about, because it's not just movies, right? Because you're a media missionary. Yeah. You're also involved with all the creative industry, and that includes even radio stations. And I was wanting to talk to you about the whole business of creatives and spirituality, but I'm afraid we're probably going to run out of time today. So I'm afraid you're probably going to get an invite to come back another time to talk about that. But just for the moment, tell us a little bit about what your media missionaries are doing in specific terms, is there a way in which people access them, or people sure. come to you? How does it actually work in practice?
So what I do now is I have my TV show you mentioned, Hound of Heaven. So I interview the first season. You can go on my website at C as in Cat, M as in Mary, M as in Mary, the number one.org. When you go on there, you'll see the Hound of Heaven, and you can see the first season, raw as it is. Where I interview famous and notable Catholics. The goal there is to use their stories to evangelize secular culture and Catholic or Christian culture. The other thing is I've been a consultant for some movies. I've been asked to be a part of some movies to consult. Also, I'm involved in PRing and promoting these films as well. And so the goal here is for me to use all forms of media to preach the gospel and to really be creative in the way we entertain and also preach at the same time. And so if you go on my website, if you make a donation or just find out what we're doing, you'll see that we're here to change the world one show at a time.
Father Darren, thank you so much. Very quickly, you hear the music. Can you just give us a very quick blessing for everybody here at the station and also all our listeners? Yeah.
May Almighty God bless everybody listening here. May they be brought to eternal life. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Father Darren. Speak to you again, I hope, soon.
Yes, please set it up. I'll look forward to it.
Okay, when we come back, we'll be praying the Divine Mercy Chaplet. Stay tuned to the Turley Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio.